Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition, this special edition, well, they're all special in my book, of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Review on this Tuesday, May 10th, 2016. I'm your host, of course, Cyril Gerald Quinn, taking you for the next half hour as we discuss the National Basketball Association. I'm, of course, joined by one Robert Sapp, who... And I can't think of one who just continues to love the Red Sox and who used to, by the way, root for the Seattle Supersonics. So how about how you like that? How you doing, Mr. Sapp?
I'm doing very well. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Enjoying some sunshine in the DMV. Finally, thought we was in the movie Seven for the past couple of weeks, but finally get to enjoy a bit of sunshine out there. Big NBA night, of course. We have Game 5 in San Antonio, Oklahoma City, which has been a remarkable series, minus the Game 1 debacle. It's just been just off the charts, a tremendous series going back and forth. Two great teams, a bunch of talent. Billy Donovan really holding his own, let's be fair about that in this series. Some of the adjustments that he's made. So game five tonight coming up at a little past 8 o'clock. So again, I'm sure every basketball fan and known to man will be watching that. But we begin with last night not Miami-Toronto, which by the way has been an underrated good series as they've had three overtime games. It's been a fun series. But we begin with one Wardell Curry II, who returned last night after basically 2 weeks of rehab and two weeks of being out of action with the sprained MCL grade one. And he returned and, showed you why he is now the two-time league MVP unanimous this year and why he is the world's greatest player. What were your thoughts on what you saw last night out of Steph Curry?
Yeah, no, we had done a text exchange before the game, and my expectations were 15 to 20 minutes coming off the bench, and you kind of ease him back into the series. I thought yesterday would be mostly about getting his win back, getting him back into getting into game shape, and then you would escalate. I didn't even think yesterday was necessarily about the win or the loss. I thought it was strictly about getting him back into playoff basketball shape. And so that's kind of like what I was expecting to see. And it's kind of like how Kerr said in the press conference. That's what we initially saw. We initially saw somebody who was a little bit rusty. We saw somebody who was just kind of testing out the lateral movement, the banging against bodies, picking his spots here and there. I was definitely impressed watching him go to the rim. Which is kind of like what I would have been a lot more concerned initially if he was just shooting threes and wasn't kind of driving to the rim. But anyways, none of that is here to say, because whatever. He erased all that, all those early little things I would have been said. Because I think what was the most impressive about watching that game, and that game was watching him, was just like, yes, this is the playoffs are finally here. Like, just that having him looming over everybody is just like, yep, this is this is what this needed to be the entire time, and what was missing from the playoffs up until this point was watching him work it out real time, just watching him just work through everything real time, and then literally go from rusty, you know, just getting my win back to playmaker, you know, getting teammates involved, hitting, you know, driving, hitting the twos, to just effing spectacular, to nuclear Steph Curry. Like, just watching that in the process of a game was ridiculous. It was ridiculous to watch that. Because I was just watching something. It would have been interesting if he would have started off really hot and then cooled off as the game would have went on. But that would have logically made sense. But like, oh, he's really amped up, the adrenaline's pumping, and then okay, all right, he needs to continue working. But to watch him work through the entire process through just one game, and literally at the end of the game go, yep, he's 100% back, no worries, it's on and popping now, they're back to being the number one, you know, they're back to being the undisputed reigning champions, and somebody's just going to have to find an incredible way to knock them off, and, you know, we're hitting the ground running again, was absolutely unbelievable, unbelievable to watch. So I went into this game anticipating 15 to 20 minutes, just working him back to getting his win back, to going like, yep, they're the ones to beat. And, you know, as well as Cleveland is playing, and whoever comes out of San Antonio, OKC, that boy is a problem. He's a significant problem, and I don't know how you're gonna win. I don't know how you're gonna beat this team. So, good luck. Good luck to that rest of the league.
Yeah, it's funny because I think that there are two schools of thought when it comes to the overall NBA last night with what transpired. Number one, as a league, if you're Adam Silver, you're probably doing cartwheels, backflips.
It was a great night of basketball. You know, great night.
Yeah, toasting champagne. But I'm just talking about the Steph Curry aspect. I'm not even talking about Toronto.
Oh, right? Yeah, oh my God, yeah.
So you're toasting. Sorry. You are just doing. You're doing the dance. You're doing the jiggy leg or whatever, the stanky leg. You are. The happiest man in America.
For real. I have people texting me that don't normally watch basketball being like, I had to stay up watching and working in the morning, texting me being like, are you watching this? I had to stay up for this. So to your point, absolutely.
So
absolutely.
That's one end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum is if you are the other remaining teams left in the NBA in the playoffs, you like, damn. You might not come out and say that, but you're like, damn. Damn, damn, damn.
So I'm sure there were
two different types of emotions from that standpoint seeing his return. I'm not gonna go crazy about the individual performance from a historic perspective because listen, outside of Michael Jordan, first round against the Celtics in '86, I can't say one of the greatest performances of all time before the conference finals. I just can't. Michael Jordan did what he did. He scored 63 against one of the greatest teams of all time, the '86 Celtics, 63 points. So that's the exception. To me, I feel like what he did last night was take another step, a major step, in becoming one of the greatest players of all time. And I say that from a standpoint of he's already won the MVPs, already won a championship, but there was a mythic-like quality to what he did last night. We were having a conversation 2 weeks ago.
Great work.
Like, yo, this dude's not going to play. Like, don't bring him back. Man, this is terrible for the league. I feel bad for him. Like, we were like, like this, I mean, to go from where we were at in our discussions to where he got to where he could play and to where he did last night, you're talking about a different animal with this.
We were having that conversation last night. Well, one of us was like, he shouldn't play. I at least gave him 15 to 20 minutes.
You were scared.
But my point being, we were literally having that conversation last night. It varied in, like, people's perspectives, but, you know, and we weren't the only ones. There was a significant chunk of experts that were like, you know what, chill, blah, 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 you know, like everything like that.
Right.
So, yeah. No, you're right.
No question about it. So the level of, like, to me, you know, everybody saw the Jordan flu game. I mean, Kobe had a game in the finals when coming off the ankle injury, came back when Shaq fouled out. People are his toughness. He's arrived. So certain performances stand out. The Isaiah Thomas one ankle game, you know, where you reach another level through sheer will, beyond skill. It goes beyond skill through sheer force and will and heart and mental, you know, mental toughness. He took that step last night. He took a major step with it last night. It's not because last night wasn't even about, to me, his skill per se. It really wasn't. I knew he could shoot. We know he could shoot. We know he has all the skills,
of course,
in the world offensively. Last night was about, like, this dude, first of all, he's a killer. He's a killer. He's an assassin. He said once he hit that one shot, once he hit the three, not the first three, but once he hit the shot that was almost a three, he looked at his wrist and said, "It's now. It's time. Like, it's time. Now is the time." Like, something. Like that.
Yeah.
He made a gesture to the fans. He's like, "Yeah, it's time now. Like, yeah, I'm
and
there.
That,
I'm
Surreal." And that was, like, to me, even beyond, because you're right, it's not about skill set. We know he's the greatest shooter of all time. Everything like that. That to me showed, like, this dude is the entire pack. Like, he's a show. Like, that's the difference between, you know, I was trying to put in my mind, like, you know, because I believe in Draymond Green, I believe in Klay Thompson. They're very good players. They're excellent players, you know. And so, like, I was trying to put in context for myself, like, all right, what is it? Like, of course, Steph Curry makes them a championship-level team, but there's something else. There's something I'm not being able to put my finger on as to why he's as important as he is on a team of very good to excellent players. Like what is the thing that just tips him over the top? Is it, like, how the defense has to respond to him? And then in that game and watching that, I was just like, no, he's a show. Like, there's two iconic, and you're absolutely right. Like, I think you put it perfectly when you say, you know, mythological. There's going to be two iconic moments in, like, outside of just the legend that will be him coming back and the performance that he put on. But there'll be two iconic images. The first image will be, you know, when he hits the three, he turns around and he's just shouting, "I'm back, I'm back." Like, literally chills on the back of my eyes. Like, yo, this dude is ridiculous. Like all that killer confidence in the world. That was one. And then, of course, the second one was when he dropped the owner of the opposing team's jaw. Like, that will never go away.
Yeah.
Like, that will never go away. And that's what I mean by a show. He is a show. And, like, once you reach that status, to me, that's, like, the next level. You know, like there's tons of really good players in the NBA, right? Like, there's tons of talented players in the NBA.
Absolutely.
But you ascend to that next level when you become must-see TV, when you do stuff that either people can't, A, believe, or B, don't expect, and then C, have to share it about. And so, you know, the next time Curry steps on the court, there's going to be a tremendous amount of people watching just because they don't want to miss that jaw-dropping moment. And that is what he is. And so, like, yeah, I just think, like, that killer mentality equals, like, you know, there's a lot of comparisons about, you know, Jordan and, like, everything like that, you know. And then, and I think, like, that is, like, what starts to put him in that type of category, not skill set wise, not dominance wise, but that type of category of, all right, like he is becoming that that electric star that you just can't miss. You can't miss it. You just, no matter what, he might go 8-4, you know, 20. He might. It might. It absolutely might happen. But he might do some ish you've never seen in your life, like he did that game. And that was the game you probably would have been most likely to be like, yeah, it'll be all right. Like, our best is a good game. Like, that's as much as we can hope for, is that he plays a good game. For him to do what he did in that scenario and just be like, he just blew my mind? Like, no, I'm not missing the Steph Curry game. Not if I can help it. I'm not missing the Steph Curry game. Because I can't risk not seeing what he's going to do next. Can't risk it.
We were there. We were in the, you know, sports bar when, you know, Oklahoma City back in February, where it was just like, what really, really? And again, similar situations. Team down a lot, gets hurt, comes back, and goes crazy. Like, so we've kind of seen this before in different circumstances. Of course, he was out 2 weeks this time, but like, he, again, his mental, and I thought about something his mom said on Mother's Day when they was doing the features about the mothers. His mom said, you know, everybody talks about, you know, the baby face and, you know, nice guy, cool dude off the court. Like, yeah, this dude, like, his competitiveness, this dude, he's like, basically, she was saying, yeah, like, yo, he's a killer. Like, he's like, don't get it twisted. Basically, that's what she was trying to say. Like, don't,
yeah,
this soft thing, like, no, this is a different, this is not, he's not that dude. Like, you are surely mistaken if he's that
and I
dude.
Think,
yeah, go ahead.
I think that's the thing that's just like the hardest, and even me and my fandom of Steph Curry, you know, I think that's the hardest thing. And this is, I think this game went a big way into really shedding that. This game and then being the first unanimous MVP, I think, was like perfect double, like, hammer on shedding the, you know, he doesn't look like Jordan, right? Like, that's the thing. Like, he just, like, his face, his, like when you think killer, when you think, you know, this is, it's the Jordan, that's the image that pops into a majority of our heads, you know, like,
right.
that's what it looks like to go out and rip somebody's heart out. You know, that's why LeBron James got so much hate initially when he's passing the ball around, because you look the part. You look big. You look like you could be intimidating and scary, you know, and tough. And, like, why are you passing the ball? Like, that's not what you're supposed to do.
Right.
On Curry's,
right,
on the Curry flip side, Curry doesn't look that way. He looks like he should be passing the ball in big moments. He looks like, you know, he should be standing in the corner, taking a three when the ball is passed to him around. And so it's just, it has been hard for people to wrap their minds around, we're watching one of the greatest players to play this game. It's just hard to put that on him, you know, or it has been hard to put that on him because of that baby face and fast and stuff like that. But at least for me, like, when he hit that three and just was turning around, just being like, I'm back, I was like, yo, this dude is so, like, cocky, confident, just like, you could just see he was sitting at home going, yo, I can't wait to get back out there because I'm going to light everybody on fire. Like, from the moment that I step on this court, I'm going to light everybody up. And that, you know, that, as we know, there's only a small percentage of NBA players who have that type of confidence. There's only a small percentage, and then the talent to back it up.
Yeah, no, there's no two ways about it. Before we get to the Spurs, Oklahoma City, because I definitely want to touch on that. You know, when stuff like this happens, you, of course, when you don't process it immediately, it takes, you know, the next day you start thinking about the stuff that you might have missed while you were watching it. And there were some underrated aspects of that game that I thought about today, you know, basically 24 hours later, or, you know, whatever, 12, 15 hours later. Number one, and this is almost a question / comment, does Steph Curry happen if Sean Livingston doesn't get kicked out of the game? Are we even like that was it? I mean, because that was it. Sean Livingston, of course, is the backup point guard, and so you know was the starting point guard before you know started when Curry, in Curry's absence. I don't know how to answer that question. I don't know if we can, but I mean, they had to play. He had to play more minutes. I mean, that definitely shortened the bench, shortened the rotation. You're only going to go so many minutes with Ian Clark or Barbosa. That was an underrated aspect of that game that I thought about today. Sean Livingston, of course, getting ejected foolishly. Sean, you are a six man. Like, calm down. Those double technicals. You got fouled. You know, go back and play defense. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I have two big thoughts on it, and neither one will make any sense at all. I mean, like, and I totally acknowledge and recognize that neither one make any sense. The first one is, if I was a conspiracy theorist, I would say he got injected on purpose, right? Like, it was his first ejection of his career. It was his first ejection ever. Ever. Why then? Why at that moment? Like what could have possibly, like, we all saw the foul. Like, it was a foul. Absolutely. You get hit in the face. You're upset. You go, blah, 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 ref. You get the T. Turn around. That's as basic as it always happens. Like literally, that's as basic as it always happens. So why flip out to that extent? So literally, like when I was processing it after the fact, I'm like, you know, like, if I was a conspiracy theorist, I would totally be like, you know, he did that on purpose in order to motivate staff. Again, I recognize that makes absolutely no sense. My second one that makes absolutely no sense, but I think this is the one that I probably choose to lay my hat on, is that, you know, however, whatever way you want to say, of course, I don't want to be like, you know, there is a, you know, I would never be like, God cares about basketball. But for whatever reason, you know, however anyone chooses to believe, like, how fate just sometimes happens, however it is that you choose that, it had to happen that way last night, right? Like, because you're absolutely right. Without Livingston, if Livingston doesn't get ejected, it doesn't happen. That just doesn't happen. Kerr's going to stick more or less to the 25 minutes. He might have gone over depending upon how the game was going, but the rhythm of Steph would have been delayed. So we would have got a delayed point at every time, and then who knows, you know, a half second off or, you know, a few minutes here or there. Doesn't allow for the magic of that moment to happen. And so it laid itself out, you know, perfectly. And so I recognize neither of those two theories make any sense, but what happened didn't really make any preferable sense. It's almost like, you know, like all the philosophy that they would do in the Matrix. And it's like, whatever happened had to happen because it's the only way that it could happen, right? Like, there's no answer to it. It just happened that way because it had to happen that way because Steph had to give us that performance at that moment. And so I've never been more sure. Watching last night, I've never been more sure that they're going to win a championship this season. At any point in the season, I've never been more sure than right now that this is their to lose. Like, they're not losing. It's not happening. And it's because everything just happened because it had to happen that way, and it just is. So I say all that to say, I recognize none of those make any official sense, but it doesn't happen without Sean Livingston being ejected. So Sean Livingston flipping out, acting crazy way beyond anything he's ever done, happened for a reason, and that reason was for Steph Curry to put on a show and then just to continue that show going on.
The second underrated thing about that game was, and I texted to you this morning, you and Chad, the Draymond Green performance was spectacular.
Yeah, he was great. Yep,
I mean, he goes 21, 9 rebounds, 5 assists,
7 blocks,
and 4 steals. and really changed, I thought, in that third quarter when they outscored Portland 29-18, changed the complexion of that game. He had like three blocks
and everything.
Like two. And I think, you know, as a former, as an ex-basketball player, the most demoralizing thing to me, especially offensively, is to get your shot blocked. Like, that's just disrespectful. I'd rather shoot an air ball than get my shot blocked. Like, it's just demoralizing. It sucks the life out of you. Like, damn, can we score? I don't think we can score it. Like, you get your shot blocked. You know, I got this layup. Oh, no. He just came out of nowhere and just knocked it out of bounds. Kept it inbounds, a couple of them. So I thought that his performance was just off the charts great. And you could tell that I'm not going to compare it to this level, but they feed off each other. Like, Draymond and Steph just absolutely, like, they have their own little inside connection as far as that chemistry. They absolutely feed off each other, like, hand in hand. Like, they, you know, Draymond's energy versus, you know, when Steph's making shots or, you know, when Steph's even not making shots, just Draymond's just drive, even when he gets a technical foul or something like that, he just drives that. He's the engine behind that team, without question. And last couple of games, even in the game Saturday night, he was, you know, at 37 points. He was off the charts good. All right, a couple minutes on Oklahoma City, San Antonio. Have you seen enough out of OKC that would change your opinion on them possibly being able to win this series? Can they win this series?
They can't have – so two things. So have I seen enough? No. Like, there's been nothing different that I've seen that has happened in this series that I would have thought differently about. So, no. Can they win this series? Yes. I think the big game that kind of changed the direction of this series was the game where Oklahoma City was doing what Oklahoma City does, and that's blow a game late, and they didn't completely blow it.
Game two.
Yeah. That was the one. I think if that one goes down and San Antonio wins that game, then we're pretty much at we'd be 3-1 right now. We'd be 3-1.
3-1.
And OKC will win one more, and then San Antonio closes it. However that went, 4-2. So I think that oddly changed the dynamics of the series. And so the thing about OKC, and I think if I had to find something that I didn't necessarily see coming with San Antonio, is that OKC, as everybody knows, is so overwhelmingly talented with Kevin Durant and Westbrook. They put so much pressure on you defensively to control them offensively. All know that. What I didn't necessarily foresee is how slow and older San Antonio would look like in some of their peripheral players. Tim Duncan just, you know, it's the Peyton Manning thing. It just hit him, slam, done. I mean, like, no gradual, we're not going to, like, oh, look, we're noticing a little bit. It's like, nope, one day you were great. The next day you can't even think about playing in a series. And so, I think, like, that dynamic, you know, that lack of being dynamic outside of Kawhi and LaMarcus Aldridge is something I didn't necessarily foresee, because, like, the younger players, even Kawhi to a certain extent, are having to expend so much energy. Like, Danny Green's having to expend so much energy guarding Westbrook, you know, and running and everything. And even, like, you know, the younger, sloppier players on the Thunder, which there are plenty, They like still they're just like little kids out there, just like running. And anybody who has dealt with kids, you know, even though you're the older, more mature one, you have, you know, the psychology that you can use, you have the experience to rely on. When there's enough of them, they could just flat out tire you out. You just get exhausted of chasing them around, even and using all that experience and everything. You're just like, yo, y'all don't stop ever. And that's what I'm noticing just on the fringes of With the Thunder, even though their execution has not gotten any better. Don't let anybody tell you it has. It has not. No. Their execution has not gotten any better.
We give Donovan credit for making subtle adjustments about, like, playing Steven Adams and
I like the tweaks he's making to the lineup. I really do. I have a couple of lineups that I really do enjoy that he puts out there. That I'm like, oh, those are good pairings.
Yeah, yeah. So I'll give him credit for that support. Here's what I'll say. In my heart of heart, gun to my head, I still think probably San Antonio is probably going to win the series, but I'm starting to lose confidence. And it's starting to reminiscent of 2012 when they were cruising along. They had swept the first two rounds. They looked unbeatable, beat Oklahoma City first two games. Oklahoma City won four straight. And I say that because, to me, they have no, like, I'm like, what are they going to do with Kevin Durant? Now, in this series, they have gone with Danny Green on Russell Westbrook. Danny Green on Durant.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Kawhi Leonard on Westbrook.
They'll switch him. Yeah.
Yeah, they'll switch him up. They'll switch him up. But they.
Yeah. But Danny Green has been mostly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Durant has solved that as far as when Danny Green guards him. So to me, if I'm San Antonio, like, Durant can get on those roles where he can average like 35 for the next three
years.
He's capable of that.
Kawhi's going back on it. Yeah, that's definitely happening.
That's what I was going to ask you. That, to me, I think in San Antonio, you have to put Kawhi as the primary defender on Durant. I really do.
Yeah.
And just risk the fact that, you know, Danny Green might get lit up by Westbrook, but you also risk the fact that Russell Westbrook might try to take 30 shots based on the fact that Kawhi is off.
Yeah.
So that, to me, I'm tempted. Yeah. I'm going to tempt Russell Westbrook to try to take over.
Yeah.
So I think they have to make adjustment in order to win this game. I just think that that was a vintage Durant performance, game four.
And that was like, and that's the X factor, right? Like that's the thing where, here's how I would describe it to what you're saying. I think the last two games in the Golden State series has been interesting. I'll tell you how I relate it to Thunder and San Antonio. In the game in which the Warriors lost, Clay goes for 38 and or 34 and Draymond goes for 38. I think that's how it went. So Clay had 37, Draymond had 38, something like that. Like they're both in the high 30s. My point is, Damian has 40, right?
Right.
In the game last night, Damian has 36, 38. McCollum has a very good game in the high 20s, and Amino has like 18. What I noticed in those two games in the reverse order is, and this is an obvious statement, it's not necessarily how many points you get, it's when you get those points.
Right.
In that game, Damian Lillard was hitting every big shot. Curry in that game last night was hitting every big shot, right? And so I say that to say, to your point, you give Russell Westbrook normally, if he's not under control, you give him enough rope, he'll hang himself with it. He will try to shoot it. If you give it to him, he'll try to shoot it 60 times. You know, results will be damned because I'm going to put up these points. But just because he's putting up those points doesn't necessarily mean they're the most effective points in the world. The dangerous thing about Kevin Durant is that he takes kill shots. Points when he scores, they hurt you. They hurt you. That 40 he put up against, it hurt. He hurt him at every point. Whenever you're about to make a run, three, that knocks you out. Whenever you need the momentum, he drives it in the lane, gets that two. Whatever, da-da-da-da, and then that feeds into, like, him passing different ball, blah-blah-blah. Anyway, like all that stuff. But the point being, exactly just to piggyback off your point, is that Russell Westbrook, not only, because I agree with you, that's exactly the strategy they should implement, and which I expect Popovich to implement with his own little twists and turns on it. Russell Westbrook holds the key to these last three games in terms of, can he play under control even when it seems like his shot is the best shot? That's going to be the telling part of it, and that's also why I would go, not only because I don't necessarily have faith in their late game execution, but as on part of that, I just don't have enough faith. Love Westbrook as a player. I don't have enough faith that he can consistently remain under control, even when it seems like his shot is the best shot.
Right. No question. Like you, this is why Durant is the better player. And I love, you know, I'm a Westbrook. I've been, even when people were not on Westbrook, I was a Westbrook fan. I love how he just goes out there and competes every second. Durant's points are much more impactful. Much more impactful. First of all, he's more efficient. Number one, he's more efficient with his shot. And he's going to take high percentage shots, and he's going to get to the line. But they're just, like you said, they're daggers. Like, his points just, they hurt. And it seems like Durant 31 versus a Westbrook 31 are two different types of 31-point games. They really are. Like, Durant will take 17, 18 shots to get that 31. Westbrook will take 25, 23, 24 shots to get that 31. And everybody not get involved, or everybody not be in rhythm. Durant could score 35 or 40 and still have Stephen Adams have a big game, or Deion Waiters have a big game.
There you go.
That's the difference. That's why Durant's the better player. And Westbrook Westbrook has said Durant. Westbrook has come out and said Durant's the best player in the world. We disagree with that. But, Westbrook knows it in his heart, per se. He wants to do – the guy has averaged 10 assists. You know, he led the league in assists this year, or it was second assist. So he's not a selfish player. But it's the gift and a curse with Westbrook. Like, it's like he can't, he's still fighting that competitiveness to take over a game versus that setting people up and getting people involved and playing. He's only 26 years old. He's still trying to fight with that. He's still battling that. And not having a Greg Popovich or a Rick Carlisle or a Pat Riley, that type of coach, or Phil Jackson, be like, yo, this is how you're going to play. I mean, Phil Jackson had to do it with Kobe in his younger years. Like, yo, this is how you should play. Like, he fought tooth and nail with Kobe to win those championships. So imagine Westbrook, you know, not as talented, but not having nowhere near that kind of presence in the locker room to tell him that. So, to your point, that's why you lean towards San Antonio, because these games are going to be close. It's going to come down to late game execution, who makes less mistakes, and you have to lean towards San Antonio. But like I said, I would not be in the least bit surprised if Oklahoma City wins this series, because they have thoroughbreds. And San Antonio cannot run with them. They can't run. San Antonio wants to play half court, pick and choose when they run. Oklahoma City has thoroughbreds, you know.
That's what they do. They run.
Push the pace, run up and down, try to wear you out, get Westbrook in the open court, you know, and go from there. So it should be a classic game. Looking forward to it. We've had, you know, three good days of basketball. I mean, we've had, you know, last night, what you saw. Quick second on Miami Toronto, because Dwayne Wade has been spectacular.
He's essentially the difference. I mean, it's just that simple. Those teams are dead 1,000% even. Just like, if you could just be like, you know, fit like 50-50, those coin flip. It's literally coin flip every time. They talent wise, everything. They are 50
yes.
on paper.
And now
50,
you're 50 with the injuries.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But even you put Valanciunas back in, I think I'm saying that right. You put Whiteside back in, they're 50-50. They're just 50-50.
Right.
Every, you know,
yeah,
like 50-50.
Wade is
he's that he's the you know, that's why you have somebody like him. That's why you keep that veteran, you know, championship presence around. You don't jettison that because he's the only one who understands how to step it up, when to step it up, and exactly how to step it up. And to your point of what we were talking about with Westbrook, sometimes stepping it up isn't that I have to jack up a million shots. He did that last night because nobody else wanted to take a shot. Maybe Joe Johnson and everything, but everybody else is just like, this moment is scary.
No.
Here, Wade, you do. But the other game, I think it was game two that they won in overtime, where he made the key defensive plays. Maybe that was game one that they won. Yeah, game one.
Game,
I think it's game right. They won game one and four, right, Miami? Where he made those key defensive plays at the end of the game.
Oh, game three. They go on game three.
Game three.
Game four. No, they won game. Toronto won game. Game three. Miami won game four. So game.
Okay.
So it had to be. They won game one, and Miami won game four.
Right. Well, anyway, yeah. It was. So, anyways, being a championship, being a champion, being a veteran, understands that he can affect the game in different ways. He can affect it equally with his defense as he can his offense. I mean, he's been the key to the game. Here's the question that I do want to investigate more so than that. We know Dwayne Wade is great. We know pretty much everybody else he's playing with is there some good pieces, not quite ready there to average pieces. What is going on with Lowry and DeRozan? What?
This is what I'll say about Lowry and DeRozan. Okay, both of them are very good players. They're very good players. Here's what I'll say, and I came to this conclusion today when I was kind of looking at their numbers, looking at what they've done, and what have you. They play in the Eastern Conference. Okay, bottom line. So they've made the All-Star team twice.
Yep.
And they've been good players, but it's been against, for the most part, inferior competition. And you're talking about a franchise that has a history of losing in the playoffs on top of it. So before they almost took, like, Indiana had no business in that series. None. You look at, I mean, Paul George is the best player in that series, but you get past Paul George. Like, Toronto was light years better than Indiana. I mean, it's not even comparable, those rosters, once you got past Paul George. So the fact that that went seven games told you all you need to know about those two as far as them playing in, you know, pressure games, and as far as those two just not being. This is why, as a Laker fan, it scares me, the prospects of the fact that DeRozan's from California, that the Lakers will give him $150 million. I mean, it's certainly on the table. Scary. It's on the table. But, you know, you got players in this league who are just – they're not on that level. They're good players. You know, they've been all-stars, but are they really true all-stars in what an all-star is? You know, probably not. They're just not that good. It's like, I know they're not bad. They're very good players, but they're not. What they're showing you is they are not guys who should be leading your franchises. That's what it's telling you. Like, you have two, in essence, you have two number threes, not two. Forget about two number ones or two number twos. You have two guys who on a playoff championship caliber team would be the third best. Should be your third best player. Like, you're not winning a championship with DeRozan or Lowry even being your second best player.
Yeah.
I'll put it in this perspective. What would what would DeRozan and Lowry be on the Spurs, Thunder, or Cleveland Cavaliers?
Yeah.
In terms of rankings. Like they would
third
be
best.
Like yeah. They would be like the fifth. I mean, they would be on Golden State, they would be like the fourth best.
Oh God.
Behind the fourth or fifth best.
Yeah, no, I'd probably put a fifth best on Golden State behind Iggs. I probably put like just in terms of composure and being able to positively impact the game at important crucial times. I want Iggs over them in those at that time. So,
San Antonio, they'd probably be fourth best behind Leonard, Aldridge, and even the old Tony Parker, even like a D-out. So like and Cleveland
is fourth best. After Love.
That put Oklahoma City. I mean, Oklahoma City fourth best behind the big two in Ibaka, and even somebody like Steven Adams. So I can make a case that they'd be fifth best. So that's my point. Like the conference, and this is why. And I don't want. And again, this is not. I know somebody who's listening to the show going to be like anti-LeBron, anti-Cleveland. This is why I'm not going crazy about what Cleveland is doing. In terms of who they're playing, you have to look at that component in the NBA because it's all about the matchups. It's all about the matchups. But that to me can only explain DeRozan and Lowry. They're just not that good. It's all this twist. Yeah. I mean, what else do you need to know, man? When the dude shoots under 40% for 10 straight playoff games, what else do you need to know?
No, I'm glad like that's perfect. I'm glad you said it that way because like I don't want this to be like in watching it, just watching intensely, probably watching Toronto intensely for my first time ever. It's like I've read a lot of stuff that's like, you know, it's in their head and like, you know, like, oh, look at Lowry, he's staying late at the gym to shoot and like this is like all this is gonna elevate him as a superstar and that. To your point, it's like, no, I know what I'm looking at. They're not that good. they're just not that good. They are being put in a position they can't possibly consistently even hope to maintain. They are not leaders of a number two seed. They're not that good. And that, when you broke it down like that, I was perfect. Like, that's exactly what my eyes were telling me. But because I hear so much of the chatter, like, oh, but they're all-stars and they blah, 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 blah. I'm like, am I missing something here? is there a missing component that I just haven't seen? That everything you said made 1,000% sense.
No, it's just, I mean, sometimes, man, in life, you know this as well as I do. Sometimes it is what it is, and sometimes the simple answer is the obvious, man. Like, we look to overanalyze analytics, overthink stuff, but sometimes it's just that simple. These are above average players. They are absolutely above average players who have gotten a team to where they won over 50 games. They're number two in the Eastern Conference. But when it comes to championship-level basketball, playoff pressure, you know, you're going to get exposed. Like, just that, you know, playing Sacramento in January versus playing Dwayne Wade in May is two different animals. It's just – and that's why you see an old-ass Dwayne Wade killing them. Like, Dwayne Wade is not supposed to be doing it to them. Like, realistically, they're supposed to be – showing Dwayne Wade the door. If they were that good, they would be showing him the door. It's in many ways, or at least making an argument that they are could be as good as him. Right now, no. Even old ass Dwayne Wade is on another stratosphere compared to those two. It's just that simple with them. So no, I'm fine. I'm not gonna criticize DeRozan or Lowry. This is who they are. I mean. Like Shaq said, Shaq was like, look, certain guys just not playoff pressure players. He's like, that's some guys, this is who they are. Shaq called it out. Out of all the people, this is Shaq. Keeping it simple. Called it out. Like, look, they just not. Well, I played with dudes who just didn't come up big in the playoffs. It's just, It's just in their DNA. It's just who they are, you know. So hopefully Miami, please Miami, win that series so we're not subjected to another sweep by Cleveland or by a boring Eastern Conference. At least with Miami will put up a fight. You have some storylines. You have Wade, LeBron going at it. So if the basketball guys are looking out for it, please let Miami win that series. I can't do a Toronto Cleveland. I just can't. And I think for Cleveland's sake, moving forward, it would be best for them to play Miami. You go from Atlanta to Toronto to Golden State? Nah. That. You want some resistance. Like, you really do. You want some resistance.
Yeah. I agree with that. I agree with that. I'm starting, whereas at the very beginning of this playoff, I mean, we both thought it was going to be Cleveland, Miami in the Eastern Conference Championship.
Right.
I had more confidence in that Miami could put up some resistance to Cleveland. Just because, like I said, like, even at, you know, how horrible Toronto's playing, their two quote-unquote stars or their all-stars are playing, it's still an even series, and that concerns me. That does concern me a little bit.
You said please, Miami.
Yeah.
I didn't say Miami. I said, please, Miami.
No.
Please.
Yeah, please. No. I get that. I just, like, you know, is it just four games and out no matter which of these teams steps up to Cleveland? I have more hope for Miami, but my hope is diminishing with each and every overtime game that happens. Just like, man,
y'all can't put these guys away. Yeah, how much
do
they have left in the tank going into Cleveland? I totally understand.
I'm like, put them away, go ahead, get them. And I'm just like, damn, y'all can't put them away. Ugh.
No,
all right.
Yeah, no, they can't.
We just gotta.
I feel like even if it's a sweep, it will be a competitive sweep. I'll put you that way. It'll be a Detroit.
Yeah, I do agree with that. I agree with that.
You might get an overtime. You get a classic Wade 30, LeBron 35 point, something. Like, you'll get something compelling. I just feel like Toronto would be like, man, like, why am I watching this? Like, I feel like I will watch the games, but I'd be like, damn, I got to, man.
Yeah.
Like, really, really, I see this. I got to sit through this. Like,
yeah.
I just feel like they
– It's kind of like those are the games. A Toronto-Cleveland game is like when you're doing stuff on the computer and you look up to, like, you're listening and just kind of like looking just to see. And then you look up to see in the fourth quarter if anything's happening. Otherwise, you're just kind of like doing other stuff and just kind of like keeping the game in your periphery, instead of like any of the West games. Now you're just like, all right, I'm watching every second of this.
Right, no question about it. So looking forward to it. Cleveland's gonna have a long, you know, resting period. You take rest over rust any day. Get those guys
absolutely.
You'll deal with it having a rusty first half of the game of a game one in the next series versus risking an injury or something like that. LeBron has a lot of miles on him. So I'll never complain about a sweep. Oklahoma City, you know what the deal is there with those two going at it tonight. And tomorrow, Stephen Curry will officially get – well, he's already got his MVP award, but he'll get it announced – and through the crowd that had a ceremony, which can be tricky at times. But I frankly expect them to hit Portland with a knockout blow in the first quarter. Because I think they want to hurry some rest. I think that game could be over after the first quarter, to be honest with you. And I'll give Portland, Terry Stotts can coach my team any day of the week and twice on Sunday.
That team has overachieved, there's no way they
shouldn't even be in the playoffs. Like, this team, like, yo, they have some talent. And please, people stop criticizing Damian Lillard. I'm like, no, the dude.
Oh,
they
my
lost
God. I love watching him play. That was fantastic
watching
him play. Woo.
I love Lillard, man. I like their team. I think they get the right couple. If they get a couple pieces moving forward, they have a lot of potential, man. I just like watching them play. They play hard. They're physical. They shoot threes. They're exciting. Like Portland to me has been just like you feel about Detroit. I feel about Portland. They have overachieved.
They have been impressive. That's very true.
They've been very impressive. They listen. They are so overmatched. It's not even funny. Even without Steph Curry, they're overmatched in this series.
Yeah, against Golden State.
So, but tomorrow night, I think it's going to be a rough night because I think Golden State will be motivated to get that series over, to get some rest and allow that Golden State.
Curry's first game started back in Oracle. It's a wrap.
It could be a 40-point first quarter. Yeah.
It's a wrap. Because people forget, in the half that he played just like walking into the playoffs, Curry was lighting them boys up. He had 24. He was like, he is, you can tell, like that's what I was saying, bring it all the way back. You could tell he's just been to that killer instinct mentality. He's just been chomping at the bit to get back, not just to get back to play and, be a part of the team. He's been getting back to destroy people. Like literally, like there's not a doubt in my mind that, he's gonna put on a show. he's gonna go out there and he's gonna put unless I can't even imagine how he does it. So
no,
yeah, it's a wrap.
He's going to stop. Yeah,
that was the game, and I think that they knew it. Like I think that you could tell the energy. Like I was listening to Kerr's press conference where they were asking about similarities between Jordan. He's like, they're different people. Of course, he's gonna say that absolutely, but he's like that. Those sounds in the building, like that reminded him of those sounds in the building that Jordan got going like that. And you could tell the crowd was just like, that was the one. We needed that game. We needed that game to have a hope.
Right. No. That was it. They weren't going to win the series anyway, but that, it'll be done in five. And, they'll get their proper amount of rest, get him some treatment, things like that nature. A couple of NBA notes before we head out. You have Dave Yeager, who did a tremendous job with Memphis, getting a Sacramento job. Listen, only 30 jobs, but boy, that's second.
He wanted it. He wanted it because remember we were thinking, that's it's crazy. Or people were like saying, I don't know if we ever chatted about this, and people were like, kind of messed up and everything. Then it comes out, he's been angling for different jobs, for a year now, basically, making Google eyes at other places. So, he wanted it.
Yeah.
He wanted it. So, be careful. Careful what you ask for.
Careful what you wish for. I mean, now,
could definitely say, my thought was, though, Cyril, I could definitely say there's not going to be any crying at the press conferences with this team. These guys gave it so much. They played that. Those days is over.
he might be drinking at the press conference. He's not going to be crying. He might have a bottle of Jack.
You remember those first three seasons when you went to the playoffs every year? That streak might be coming to an end fairly soon.
That streak will come in. But good for him. Good for him, a standpoint that he will make double amount of money. So instead of $2 million, he makes $4 million.
There you go. Cash that paycheck. Right,
I'm not mad at you at all. The second thing is out the NBA is just a lot of talking, and I don't know why this guy just won't shut up about in terms of Byron Scott. Just stop. Just please. You did your job as far as keeping Kobe healthy. Just stop talking. Just stop. I mean, it's just, it's one thing, talking about D'Angelo Russell, talking about you would have played the veterans more if you know they were going to fire you. I'm like, you're the fool. If you don't think you were going to get fired after this season, then you're the fool. If you didn't think that you were brought in to be Kobe's caretaker, then you know what? Shame on you. Shame on your agent, for that matter.
This is kind of fascinating to me, Cyril, because it's like Laker on Laker crime. So it's interesting to see which side you choose on this. And it's like, huh, like to me, like, all right, let me ask you this question, because I think this is where, from afar, this is where I'm having a hard time. Like, I agree. First of all, let me just say, I agree with what you're saying logically, right? I agree with what you're saying. Byron Scott should have seen the writing on the wall. In most cases, I 100% agree that, you know, it's bad. It's poor school to start trashing the place that you just left. Although I will say, I didn't hear anybody telling Kevin McHale to shut up after he was jettisoned out of Houston. Everybody was just like, yeah, man, just tell us about all the laziness that Harkins, you know. I know it's a difference. I know it's a difference. So here's my point to you. I know there's a difference in that. Here's my point to you. And this is a hard time. What is defining the Lakers for you now, right now? Because I think the majority of us, we look at the Lakers and I think Byron Scott is looking at this, and we're looking at the Lakers and we're looking at the front office, and we're saying that's who the Lakers are now. That's who they are. And that's who he's attacking against. And that's who I think everybody, that's who we're looking at and going, that's the reason that they're not a good franchise right now. And until something happens there. But anyway, so I guess like that's my point. But it sounds like I would just ask the question. So who are the Lakers for you right now? Because most of us can't right see now. Past Jim Buss. Most of us can't see past that.
They don't.
And Kupchak.
To your point, they don't have identity right now. They don't, and they don't. They're looking to be defined, per se, and we know that. You know what I'm saying? Jim Buss is who he is, per se. But the thing about if you're Byron Scott, is I'm like, dude, if the Lakers wouldn't have hired you, nobody in the league would have hired you. You wouldn't have had a job because you're considered outside the three rings you won with the Lakers. You are widely considered right now to be one of the worst coaches in the league. Like you're archaic. You don't gel well with young players. You don't believe in 3-point shots. Like you're done. Like you are a fossil. You know what I'm saying? You're like Art Shell when he tried to come back with the Raiders the second time. Like really, you're running this offense? Come on, man. Like come on.
So you just have a problem with the messenger in this case.
Yes.
Okay.
I don't. It wouldn't shock me if they told him one thing and turned around and stabbed him in the back and did another. No, would that surprise me? No, of course it wouldn't. Of course it wouldn't, considering who's running that franchise. So I'm not knocking. I'm not saying he's not being truthful in terms of what he's saying as far as being misled. I'm saying that absolutely could be on the table. I'm saying, yo, man, be grateful that you were coaching, number one,
right.
And be great, and you did your job. You, in essence, did your job, and I'm not even joking from the standpoint. You kept Kobe healthy, one. And number two, the team was bad enough to where they're probably going to get a top three pick. So you really did your job. Even though you were a horrible coach, you did your job. So just go quietly. You're going to get paid the money. Just sit down somewhere, man. Like nobody and nobody cares about, in essence, nobody cares about your whining. Like nobody really actually, nobody's going to be feeling sorry for you. Like, you're not Frank Vogel. You're not Jaeger, who a coach that got fired who shouldn't have got fired. Vogel is the one that comes to mind. You're not Lionel Hollins a couple of years ago coming off a conference, going to the conference finals. So nobody's going to feel sorry for you as being like, man, he really shouldn't have. He got a raw. You're not Tom Thibodeau. You're not that.
Yeah.
Like, you're not. Like, nobody's going to be like, as bad as the Lakers organization are, and they are bad, you're an even worse coach at this point in your career. That's my point. That's my overall point. So it's like ugly versus ugly.
Yeah. Got it. Got it.
That's the best way I could put it.
Yeah.
Ugly versus ugly. And somebody just, like, I don't hear the Lakers talking about, like, the Lakers aren't saying, like, I don't hear Jim Buss saying, hey, man, Byron was awful this year. He's the reason why our record was da-da-da-da. No. They just fired him and kept it moving. That was it.
Yeah.
So, you know, from that standpoint, I'm like, yo, man, just please, just sit down somewhere. Just, I mean, do TV, whatever. You should have plenty of money set up, saved.
Enjoy life. Just, enjoy. You've made money. You've
life.
Made enough money.
Enjoy
life.
Enjoy out there. Right. Enjoy life, man. You are still a Laker. You still have 3 rings. You still coach the Nets to 2 finals. Like, you know, you got a lot of stuff going for you, man. Like, don't tarnish it by being that dude who just can't shut up about the last 3 years. Because you know, what's going to happen is the more you talk, the more we're going to remember the last 3 years, the last 2 years that you coached a team. That's what's going to happen. Like, damn, you were like 38-136 or whatever. That's what happens. The more you talk, the more we're going to remember how terrible you were. Quick shout out. Had a niece that graduated from Cheney University last weekend, so wanted to give her, you know, Cree Encarnacion. Wanted to give her a shout out. I did not know that Cheney was the oldest, you know, historically black college, 1837. So got to learn something there. So definitely congratulations to her and all the graduates this year, the class of 2016. Man, I feel old. Walking on that college campus, felt old. Like, dang. Oh, this is a young person's world, 21, 22. So shout out to her. We still are going to do the Wire Revisited show. NBA playoffs are going on right now. You got Game of Thrones, but that program is going to happen. We will talk later, you know, probably next week about Game of Thrones. I thought last week was a setup episode. Think this week is going to be some real major things happening. For episode 5, so we'll have that and a few things on tap. We'll get Chad Quinn in here, get his thoughts, and away we go with that. So that's gonna wrap it up for this edition of Cyril Joel Quinn Review. Thanks as always to Rob Sapp for joining us. Enjoy the game. I will see you next time, Mr. Sapp. See you next time.
All right, sir. See you next time.
All right. That's gonna wrap it up for this program. As always, rate and review the program at itunes.apple.com. Look up Cyril Joel Quinn Review, Cyril Joel Quinn Review. Give us 5 stars. If you prefer 5, 4 would be good. Less than 4, I won't think you like me, to be honest with you. But I will take any comments, questions you may have. Have a great evening. Enjoy the games. We'll see you next time.